Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvachim Daf Tzadi Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Tzadi Ches, 7 lines from the top, you will notice a diamond expression. We are, in fact, in the middle of a series, as is represented by all of our different geometric forms. The words that are highlighted at this point are names of korbonos that came from a posuk that we discussed in our previous shiur. The Gemara brought in a posuk, Zois Teras Oilo, the last of the narrow lines on Daf Tzadi Zaymud Beis, in order to prove a point that Chatos sanctifies upon being absorbed into another kind of another substance, and not only Chatos, but all other korbanos are compared to a chatos with respect to this halacha of kiddush bebilua. This, of course, was the topic of our previous shiur. Since the Gemara mentioned that all the different korbanos in that posuk are hukash one to the other, the Gemara is involved with trying to understand what is learned from any given korban that it will then serve as a source with regard to the other korbanos. So one of the korbanos that were mentioned in the pasuk were the miluim. These were korbanos that were brought upon the dedication of the Mishkan. So the Gemara continues, ma miluim, in the diamond, say, ma miluim moisrehen b'sreifa, v'ein ba'le chayim b'moisrehen. This din of moisrehen is more commonly known as the din of nosar. Namely, that sacrificial meat that's left over beyond its official allotted time becomes considered nosar, and it is to be burnt. So just like by the miluim korbanos, if they were left over beyond their time, they were to be burnt, so to all other korbanos. And v'ein ba'le chayim b'bo mosrehem, by the miluim, there were no living animals that were left over, so to speak. We will go over this point briefly, shortly. So just like by miluim, we say these 2 points, af kol, so too by all the other korbanos, moisrehen b'sreifa, v'ein ba'le chayim b'mosrehen. In order to appreciate this further, we will now learn the Rashi. The first wide line under the Gemara text, you notice the Rashi, ma miluim moisrehem b'sreifa, v'lo hoyu ba'le chayim b'mosrehem demiluim. There were no living animals that appeared as leftovers when it came to the miluim. Sharei korban sibur hoyu, they were public sacrifices, v'lo hufrushu shnayim l'achrayis, and there was no situation, we said, of a leftover living animal. How could that situation arise in the first place? That would be a case where a private person had an obligation to bring a korban, and in order to guarantee his bringing of the korban, he set aside an additional animal as a backup, that if something happens to the first animal, he'll have the second animal. That's called achrayas, guarantee or a backup. So this phenomenon did not exist when you were dealing with a public sacrifice, as was the case with the miluim. Rashi goes on, v'gam lo ovad echad mehem v'hifrish acher tachto v'nimtza rishon. And likewise, another situation that you would have a leftover living animal would be a situation where a person had set aside a korban, set aside an animal to offer as a sacrifice, and it got lost. Then he brought a replacement animal to be offered, and then found the original animal. That's another case of mosrehen, of a bale chayim mosrehen, a living animal as a leftover or an extra. Rashi continues, af kol hakotshim mosrehen b'sreifa, v'ein bale chayim b'mosrehen. Shim hoyu bale chayim b'mosrehen. Kegoyim. If you had a living animal that was left over. For example, Yochid Shifishne Korbanos Achrayas Chovosoi. And a private person who set aside two animals, one to serve as a backup for his obligation, that if one gets lost, he would have the second one for atonement purposes. Or he set aside a korban, and it got lost, and then he set aside an additional one, a replacement one, and then found the original one. V'hikriv es echod mehem, and then offered one of the two. V'sasheni nosar, ein nosar ze b'sreifa kivin nosar shemiloim. This nosar, this leftover living animal, was not to be burnt, was not subjected to burning. So those are the two halachas that we've learned from the miluim, that miluim sacrifices that are left over, after they've been sacrificed, they were not treated on time, they weren't dealt with on time, so that which is left over is to be burnt. And living animals are themselves, if they are leftovers or extras, as we've described already at some length, they are not subject to being burnt. Continuing in the Gemara, Shlamim, what do we learn from Shlamim? If you turn back to the original pasuk, you'll notice that Shlamim was mentioned after the Miluim. Ma Shlamim Mefaglin Umispaglin, Avkol Mefaglin Umispaglin. Just like we should mention that the din of pigol is the processing of a korban with an incorrect mindset. For example, a person slaughters a korban shlamim, which has a 2-day time period for eating it, and he intends, while slaughtering it, to eat it on the third day. That would create pigol. The source for the halachas of pigol are written in the Torah by the korban shlamim. Not only that, but if one is slaughtering a korban shlamim with a pigol mindset, the wine offerings that he brings along with the shlamim are also become pigol. That's this word mifaglin. The shlamim is mifagel, the nesachim that come with it. And mispaglin means that the sacrifice itself becomes the victim of the pigol thought. So just like pigol applies to the shlamim, so too pigol applies to all the other korbanos. B'masnisa tana mishmei de Rabbi Akiva, in a Tanaic source, it's been taught in the name of Rabbi Akiva, mincha, and this too is a reference to the pasuk that we saw before, where one korban was compared to another. We learn from the mincha as follows: ma mincha mekadeshes bebilua, av kol mekadeshes bebilua. Just like the mincha can, upon contact or absorption, cause sanctification, so too other things, other korbanos, also become sanctified through absorption. So that if you have, let us say, a sacrifice that touches a mincha, and the mincha absorbs from that sacrifice, the mincha then will be treated with the same restrictions as that other sacrifice. And that concept of bilua, absorption, applies to all other korbanos as well. In truth, we had this concept of mekadesh bebilua with regard to the chatas, and that was seen the second line from the top of this omid. The Gemara in the bracketed section will deal with the need of the Torah to teach me the concept of bilua with regard to a mincha, and with regard with regard to mincha and with regard to chatas. However, as we look at the Gemara after the bracketed section, you see the word chatas is darshaned. This represents the drushes of Rabbi Akiva with regard to the use of the word chatas. So just like we see, we should point out under our Mivneh heading, you have these diamonds with colored in tips. Then the outside margin, these are the Drashus Rabbi Akiva, Mechelek Meoisim Korbanos Shehuskru. With regard to part of the Korbanos that were mentioned previously, we'll see Rabbi Akiva's approach to what they serve as sources for. So that after the brackets, we'll then see what does Rabbi Akiva learn from the word chatos. Turning to the bracketed section, v'itzrich lemichtav mincha, v'itzrich lemichtav chatos. We need to have a source for bilua, for this issue of absorption in the case of the mincha, as well as in the case of chatos. D'i ashminan mincha, if the Torah would have taught me the idea of absorption only in the context of mincha, I would have thought the aidi d'rechicha, since it's a meal offering, a grain offering, it's soft material, mivla'a, it will absorb. So therefore, if something posel, let us say, came into contact, something unfit came into contact with a mincha, and the mincha absorbed from that posel item, the mincha itself will become posel. But that's because of absorption, which is characteristic of something that it's soft. Avo chatos emolo, but chatos, which is a sin offering of meat, it doesn't have the same soft consistency as a mincha. Maybe the din of bilua wouldn't apply. V'yashminin chatos, and if the Torah would have taught me this concept of absorption with regard to a korban chatos, I would have thought mishum de korir. The word korir, Rashi explains, because the meat is thick, it causes things to be absorbed into its depths. The thickness of the meat and the combined with the fatty element. Rashi says, after quoting a French word, he says, "Mitoch shabosur ov nichnas besoicher hashuman ba'oimkai." Since the meat is thick, so the fattiness enters deeply into it. So that's something characteristic of a chatas, of a meat offering. Avo mincha, a meal offering. Emolo, it doesn't have that same characteristic. Therefore, maybe the idea of absorption does not apply to the case of the mincha. Tzricha, therefore, I have to tell, in addition to chatos, that this concept or this phenomenon applies by mincha as well. Chatos, this is now Rabbi Akiva's take on the word chatos. Ma chatos eino bo elo min hachulin. There are 3 points here. Just like a chatas comes, when one has a chatas obligation, he must bring it from his chulin animals. In other words, he's not allowed to bring a korban chatas from, let us say, his meiser sheni, his tithes. He can't buy a meiser chatas animal with his meiser sheni fruits, or with other things that he had already set aside as obligatory offerings. So the chatas must come from chulin, from his general supply or general wealth. It's also brought by yom. It's brought, the chatas is processed, is slaughtered, and the zrikas dam takes place during daylight, daytime. And the procedures are done by yodo hayamonis, with his right hand. The Pasuk in the case of the Chatas mentions Etzba and Kahuna. These words, through the different Gezerah Shavas, show us that we're talking about a right hand. Af kol eino bo elo min hachulin ubiyoyim ubiyodo hayamonis. So too, all other korbanos must come from chulin, from their mundane animal supply, and by day, and it's to be processed with the right hand. We have a bracketed section which extends to the second line from the bottom. You can see we have a bracket length indicator to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, a vertical dash dotted line, at the end of which you see in the Gemara the brackets ends. We also have a note on the outside margin, matrices of Graham's Eglu, the purpose of these brackets, laharois, to show, shalimudim me'akabonus mamshicho achrem, that the teachings that are based on the references to these different korbonos continues after the bracketed section. You can see the word osham is then featured. Besochas agrayim, agamora dona belimudim me'hachatos. Within the bracketed section, the Gemara will be focusing on the different teachings with regard to the korban chatos.
So the Gemara in the brackets now, the chatos minolon, from where do we know that the chatos comes from chulin? We just got finished saying before in the Gemara that chatos is stated to teach me just like the chatos comes from chulin, so to all the other karbonas, when one obligates himself to bring them, he must bring them from a chulin source, from a mundane, general source, and not from other items that are obligatory or have been tithed. So where do we know that? By the korban chatos. Omar chisto, omar kro, v'kriv aroin espar, espar chatos asher loi. And that word lo is mishelo, velo mishel tzibur, velo mishel meiser. It must come from his own funds. This is a pasuk written in the context of the Yom Kippur service, in which Aaron, HaKohen, Aaron was the Kohen Gadol, he processed a par, hachatas, an ox sin offering that must have come, it was required to have come from his own pocket, his own bank account, and not from something else. That's what the idea of mishelo is. The Gemara asks, regarding the second of the three halachas that we learned from chatas, namely bayom, it's processed by day and not by night. So the Gemara asks, bayom, mi bayom tzavoso nafka. There's a separate pasuk that teaches me the din of bayom, that I can learn bayom from, that korbanos are to be processed during daylight, from yom tzavoso, and I don't need to use the hekesh to chatas for that purpose. So the Gemara answers, kedi naspa, the issue of learning yoim from the chatos, as we indicated above in number 2, is really not necessary. Question, biyado hayamonis, the idea of using the right hand, midarabo bar chano nafka, that's learned from Rabba Bar Chana's teaching, the Omar Rabba Chana, Omar Ish Lakish, wherever you see the words etzba or kahuna, you in the Torah, you know that that's a code for the right hand. The havamina right now is that in order to restrict you to the right hand, you need to have in the Torah the word etzba or kahuna in that context. So the Gemara is asking, the issue of right-handedness is not necessarily learned from the chatos, as we mentioned above, point 3, but rather it's learned from the presence of these words, etzba or kahuna. So the Gemara says, you're right, kedi naspa, that which we brought in above, that the chatos is the source for, yodoi hayemonis, is really unnecessary to have been stated. That's kedi naspa, was brought in for naught. Another approach is that the Rabbi Kiva would hold by the approach taken by Rabbi Shimon. The Omar, etzba lo baya kuna, kuna baya etzba. That where you have the word etzba alone, that will tell me right-handedness, and you don't need to have the word kuna along with it. However, if you have the word kahuna in a particular section, and you expect that to teach me right-handedness, bayo etzba, you need to have the word etzba also. In the case of the chatos, both are written. Osham, ma osham, what are we to learn from the osham? Ma osham atzmos of mutzorin, af kol atzmos of mutzorin. Just like the korban osham, after the innards are sacrificed on the mizbeach, the bones are available for your personal benefit, so too with regard to the bones of all other korbanos. As you can see with our markings, we have a slash mark indicating that which follows is a new idea. Let us glance at the outside margin where we have our Nosei Mivneh heading. We also have an indication that what we are about to describe now continues till Amud Beis. We have a bow tie form, and they represent two Beis Sugyas, two Sugyas Shel Rava, im Mivneh Domeh. The two Sugyas have a very similar structure to them. We'll see the expression pshitali dashed underline. The purpose of these markings is to show the similarity in structure. And we will see a double underline with dots in it featuring boi rava. One sugya will be Be'inyan din kibus dam chatos, a sugya that we've been discussing in the previous dapim quite a bit, the need to wash out a garment onto which there spattered some sin offering chatos blood. And number two, bedine chatzitza betvilas beged sheishel of dam and revav, dinim that involve interpositions upon immersing a garment that has a blood stain on it or a fat stain on it. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Rava, Pshita Li, Dam Chatos Lemata, Vidam Oilo Lemala, Ta'un Kibus. If you have a situation where two types of blood spattered onto a garment, first, there fell onto the garment dam chatos, and on top of that, there fell some ola blood onto the same spot that the dam chatos originally fell. So Rav is telling us that it's obvious that such a garment requires kibus, which is the washing out of the blood spot in the azor of the Beis HaMikdash. The reason for the for this being so obvious is because the dam chatos, which is the sacrificial blood that that necessitates kibus, the din kibus is stated by the korban chatos. That in this case, the korban chatos blood is not only touching the garment, it's also absorbed into the garment. Question, boy rova, dam oilo lemato v'dam chatos lemalo mahu. What happens when you reverse the situation where the dam oilo is the lower one, the one that initially became absorbed, and there fell on top of it the dam chatos? Mahu, what about the din of kibus in this case? So there are two sides to the question, and we've indicated them with a little aleph, and then you see the squiggle underlined oi dilmo, indicating an alternative. Bays that follows. Two possibilities. So, with regard to the din kibus, mishum nogeahu, v'ho nogea, is kibus necessitated because the blood, the chatos blood, is touching the garment? And in this case, the blood, the dam chatos, which is the upper surface, the upper level, is in fact touching the garment. Oy dilma mishum biluahu, v'ho lo bola. Or is the din kibus generated by the fact that the blood is absorbed into the garment? And in this case, the dam ola is that which is absorbed. In other words, the absorption capacity of the garment has been completely exhausted, we'll say, by the dam ola. So when the dam chatos falls onto that spot, the dam chatos is no longer being absorbed by the beged. It simply is touching the surface of the beged. So it could be that kibus is generated only by the fact that the blood is absorbed into the beged, and in this case, the dam chatos is not absorbed. The question has been raised. Hodor pashta. It was then he then resolved it. Di'ein te'unin kibus. That situations like this, where the dam chatos is the upper blood, there is no kibus requirement, because kibus is necessitated by the fact that the blood is absorbed into the garment, which is not the case here. Omar Rava, Pshitali, this is the second halacha of Rava, where he discusses the dinim of chatzitza, interpositions, when a beged that became tameh is to be immersed. Generally speaking, things that have become ritually impure and require immersion in a mikveh, the situation must be that the mikveh water comes into contact with the item itself that became impure, that became tomei. The effectiveness of ritual immersion is mitigated when there are interpositions on the surface of the item that requires the purification. So Rava tells us that if you have a garment that has on it a stain of blood or of fat, they can pose a problem of interposition. However, if the
individual who requires his garment to be immersed happens to be either a butcher or someone who sells fats, those kind of people are not concerned with the fact that the garment is stained with the very materials that they sell. The halacha of chatzitza, which we did not mention before, but better late than never, the main factor in the case of establishing whether something is a chatzitza or not is not the mere presence of a stain, but it is concern of the owner of the item. Is he bothered by the presence of this substance? So, in the case of a butcher or a salesman of fats, it may very well be argued that they are not bothered by these things. Hence, the dam or the ravav would not pose a problem, a chatzitza problem. Omar Rava, turning to the Gemara, pshita li, it's obvious to me that dam al bigdoi chaitzeitz, that blood, a blood stain on a garment that requires immersion in the mikveh, that became the garment that became tamei, the blood stain poses a problem of chatzitza. V'im tavachu, if he is a butcher, eino chotzeitz, the blood stain does not pose a problem, because the din of chatzitza is dependent on what we call kepeda, one's objection to its presence. And in the case of a butcher, he does not object to the blood stain on his garment. Revav al bigdo chotzeitz, if there is revav is a fatty substance. Rashi mentions that substances that melt, like fats, different kinds of fats and wax, fall under the category of, or the heading of revav. So revav on someone's garment poses a chatzitza problem. The im mocher revav, who, if the person who owns the garment is a seller of revav, eino chotzeitz, then the revav does not pose a problem of chatzitza. Boi Rava. Rava raises a question. You'll notice that we've employed a long question marking, indicating that all of the following lines of Gemara are dedicated to the question. Boi Rava, dam urevav al bigdo mahu. Let us say that there are two stains on the garment, blood and revav. If we skip the brackets momentarily, it'll aid us in the reading. Achada lo kopid, atarti kopid. Do we say that a person won't object to one stain, but even though the person may be involved with both selling meat and fats, nevertheless, even though he has these two occupations, nevertheless he is bothered by two kinds of stains. That's what the Gemara says after the brackets, that achada lo kopid, atarti kopid, or idilma, or possibly atarti nami lo kopid. It could be that since he's a regular with both substances, he's not bothered by the fact that he has two kinds of stains. So this is the question, and it remains in a tekun, unresolved form. Let's go over the Gemara again, this time with the brackets. Boi rova, dam uravav al bigdo. Now within the brackets, we'll be asking a question on the basic question, on the need to ask the question in the first place. Why is Rava asking about dam urevav? Im tabachu, if the owner is a butcher, tepuk li mishom revav. You should establish that there is a chatzitza problem because of the fat, which we've established already is definitely a chatzitza. V'im moicher revav hu, and if he happens to be a seller of revav, which would tell us that the revav doesn't bother him. However, tepuk li mishum dam, but learn that there is a chatzitza because of the blood. So what is Rava's question based on, or why does he need to ask the question when the answer seems so obvious? Lo yitzricha, there is a necessity for asking the question, the ovid ha v'ha, where the owner of the garment that has the double stain on it does both activities, that he's both a tabuch and a mocher revav. So the question then is, achada lo kopid, atarti kopid, do we say that even though he's involved with both activities, we can say he doesn't object to one kind of stain, but two kinds of stains
does bother him, and that would create a chatzisa problem, o dilma, or possibly a tarti nami lo kopid. It could be that since he's involved with both activities, taboch and tabochus, he's a butcher and he's also a moicher of av, he is not bothered by the presence of two kinds of stains. Teku, this remains unresolved. The Mishnah. Before we look at the Mishnah that begins the new perek, the 12th perek, the topic heading we have on the outside margin under the heading Nose, Lemi Loi Cholkin Karbonus. When sacrifices are divided in the Beis HaMikdash, who does not receive sacrificial division, the division of the sacrificial meat? Tevul Yoim u'mechusar Kippurim einon cholkin bekotshim le'echol lo erev. A Tevul Yom is an individual who had been Tomei and has to wait till sundown to become Tohor. Before sundown, he is expected to immerse himself in the mikveh. Upon immersing oneself in the mikveh, one who had been Tomei and immerses himself in the mikveh, he gains a title or a new category known as Tevul Yom. Mechusar Kippurim is a situation likewise where a person had been Tomei, but in addition to the immersion in mikveh and subsequent sunset, he also needs to bring korbonos on the next day, on the following day, in order to fully extricate him from the tumah status that he had previously been in. So until he brings the korbonos on that following day, he is called a mechusar kippurim. Kippurim being a reference to the sacrifices, so he's missing the sacrifices. So someone in that state of mechusar kippurim, until he's brought his sacrifices, he will not receive sacrificial division, meat of sacrifices that's divided in the Beis HaMikdash to different recipients. If he is a mechusar kippurim, he is not eligible to be one of the receivers. Even though he'd be capable in the Erev, in the evening, of eating it, nevertheless, the Tevul Yom and Mechusar Kippurim are not eligible to receive portions. They don't receive in terms of chalukah. This is not to say, of course, that he could eat from someone else's meat after he achieves his atonement, but as far as receiving his own portion is concerned, a Tevul Yom and a Mechusar Kippurim do not receive their own portions. Onein. An onein is a situation where someone's relative passed away, one of the relatives that one's expected to mourn over, including father, mother, brother, sister, son, daughter, a spouse. An onein, we say, is noigea v'eino makriv. He is entitled to touch sacrifices, but cannot offer them. If he's a kohen, he cannot offer a sacrifice. V'eino cholek le'chol erev, nor does he receive a portion. Nor does he receive his own portion to eat that evening. Bali mumin, bein bali mumin are people with blemishes. Bein bali mumin oivrin, whether it be a temporary blemish. Bein bali mumin kavuin, or a permanent blemish. Cholkin. They do receive apportionment of sacrificial meat. Avoloi makriven, bali mumin, though, are not eligible to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Kol she'eno roi lavoido, enoi choylek babosar. This phrase is difficult in light of that which we just said regarding the bali mumin, but it says that anyone who's not fit to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, eno choylek babosar. He does not receive an apportionment of sacrificial meat. The Gemara will deal with the seeming discrepancy between this phrase and that which we said in the context of the Bali Mum. V'chol she'ein loy babosar, ein lo ba'oirois. He who does not receive a portion of meat also is not entitled to receive a portion in the skins. Afilu tomei b'shas rikas domim, v'tor b'shas hekter chalavim, Eino cholek b'bosar. Even if you have a situation where someone had been tomei at the time that the sacrificial blood was sprinkled, and he was tor at the time of the Hekter Chalavim. Hekter Chalavim is the offering up of the innards of sacrifices that had been offered up during the day. The innards are, at times, are offered throughout the night. So the situation just described was a person who was tomei by day and went to mikveh and became tor through the setting of the sun, and hence is eligible for offering up the innards of the sacrifices that evening. Nevertheless, eino cholek babosar, he does not receive his own portion of sacrificial meat. Shenemar, the pasuk says, hamakriv es dam hashlamim ves hachelev mibnei aroin loy tiyeh shoik hayamin limona. The pasuk says that he who offers up the sacrifices, he who sprinkles the blood and processes the basic sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, he is entitled to receive the meat portions of the sacrifice. And the pasuk is emphasizing the one who is eligible for doing the blood sprinklings and the offering on the Mizbeach. However, if someone is therefore tomei b'shas zritas damim, he is not in the category of one who is makriv dam hashlamim. And as a result of that, he is not subject to receiving the shoik hayamin lemona, a portion of the sacrifice. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.